This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We have on the phone, David, our next guest. We're talking to Jim Daly, who is the writer and producer of the
director.
He's doing everything.
And he cleans the floors afterwards. So we takes your tickets at the door.
We've got Jim Daly on the phone. Welcome to the show, Jim. Sorry, now I'm getting tongue-tied.
Good afternoon, fellas.
Now, Jim, you've got a play that you're working on called, is it called Katyn, or how do you pronounce it?
Katyn.
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 Okay, and that's going to be playing at La Mama shortly. Is that right?
Yes, we open on Wednesday night, previewing on Tuesday.
Okay. Now, before we talk,
playing through till Sunday.
Okay. Now, before we talk about that play itself, we just wanted to get a bit of background on you, Jim, and as to how you got started in the arts, and where did your sort of love for the arts come from?
Well, I was talent picked at a school speech night round about the time of the Melbourne Olympics, so it's kind of dating my age.
Oh.
I performed in a play called Let's Make an Opera by Benjamin Britten, and Michael Crawford had played it in England the year before, and I played the same role Michael did here in Adelaide, and with Dame Joanne Priest was producing it. She was a ballet teacher, very well known in the ballet world in Australia, and I then walk on extra parts in Tosca and La Boheme with the Elizabethan Opera Company. And then I did ballet with her for about 3 years. I didn't pursue that, but it was useful. And I was then in her Live to Air Children's show on television, which ran for a number of years. I was on it for about 3 years, I think, every second Sunday. The show is called Southern Stars. I then went into teaching around about just after NIDA had opened. I remember someone saying to me, oh, there's this drama school in Sydney that's just opened. But it didn't mean anything to me or my parents, and I was headed for teaching. I didn't see acting as a career. But there was something in me, and I did things with students. I wrote things, directed, produced. And then later on, I started performing again. I was married by then, had a couple of kids. And I started performing in Adelaide with Bruno, the legendary Bruno Nez in Adelaide. And then I eventually gave away full-time teaching after about 20 years of doing it to return, as it were, to being a professional actor. And then I later moved to Melbourne, and I've worked, across a range of genres since that time.
And what about the writing? How much of a part does that play in your career?
Early on, it did. I founded an old scholars theatre group. I was teaching at St Michael's at Henley Beach in Adelaide.
I'm from Adelaide. I'm from Adelaide and know St Michael's very well. Yes.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, there you are. And so that company existed for a few years, and I wrote a few short things for that. And but I decided not too much after that I would concentrate on acting. I didn't want people to be confused about what I did.
Yep.
But writing is something which has kind of come back to me a little bit.
Yep. And do you enjoy that process?
I do. This production I'm doing is part of a PhD I'm doing on the grotesque at Monash. So in the process of doing the PhD, I've had to write a lot, and I've come to enjoy writing a lot more, I must say.
Right. And how are you enjoying the PhD? Because it's a tough road, isn't it? It's not an easy thing to achieve.
It is a tough road. And look, I think everyone goes through difficult times with it for one reason or another. And I haven't been an exception to this. I think I've changed. I think everyone changes when they do a PhD.
Yeah. And why have you decided to do it in such later in life?
Well, I completed I've got a couple of master's degrees as well. I did a master's in educational administration, and then after quite a while, I did a master's of applied linguistics because I'd left the school teaching scene. I mean, I still did emergency teaching to make sure I had money coming in. As an actor, you've got to have something else.
Sure.
I've been teaching English, as a second language, mainly at the university level, casually. So I did a Master's of Applied Linguistics, and I think when I did that, I got the bug again for study. And I'd been with the cutting subject for decades, and it sort of just, it somehow found its home, its way out.
And Jim, what do you hope to achieve once you get your PhD? Or is it just something you want to do? There's no end goal?
I don't think there's one big end goal. I'll probably write a bit of stuff, articles, and do workshops on this grotesque performative that I've developed and which I integrate into the play, cut into my work.
Right. Now, things like that. Now, tell us about the play.
Okay, so the background is it's an incredible story. In 1940, Russia, the Soviet Union under Stalin, invaded the eastern part of Poland. And they really connived with Germany to do that. So Germany and Russia divided Poland between them. And the Soviets creamed off the leadership in the eastern part, mainly officers. They were reservists, so they were educated people, these people. They put them in three camps and attempted to indoctrinate them to communism, failed almost utterly. And then executed most of them.
Whoa.
So the total number executed was nearly 22,000.
Oh,
they were shot individually in the back of the neck.
Yeah.
And in 1943, the Germans stumbled upon one of the grave sites in the Katyn Forest, which is near Smolensk. And they announced to the world the Soviets had done it. The Soviets said, no, the Germans did it in 1941, at which time the Germans were in occupation of the ground in that area. And then after there were investigations, all the evidence pointed to the Soviet Union. The operation, by the way, was carried out by the NKVD under Beria, Avrenti Beria. And then after the war, the case goes to Nuremberg trials, where it disappeared, because the Russians were in charge of that section dealing with crimes against prisoners of war.
Mm.
And Mr. Jackson kind of caved in. The Allies didn't really know what to do. And then the next thing is, in the early 50s, there's an inquiry in the US Congress, and the recommendation, they find again that all the evidence points to the Soviet Union, and they recommend it be brought to the world court, but it's never gone to the world court.
Okay. And so, Jim, where and how did you stumble across this, and why did you find it so intriguing? Well, obviously it's very intriguing.
Well, yes. So I married a Polish lady, Joanna Jankowska. Kowska.
Hey, get her name right, otherwise you're in trouble.
Yes. Well, I have male, female versions, the ski and the scar. you've got to get it right. So her dad, Robert, he showed me this book. It's called The Crime of Katyn, forwarded by General Anders, who was in London at the time, because the Polish government moved to London, basically. It was like a government in exile. And he showed me this book. So it was the first time I'd heard about it. So to a young guy growing up, when I did, in Australia, the war was about New Guinea, the Japanese, the bombing of Berlin. We didn't have a lot of images of the great shedding of blood that occurred in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in the book, he showed me a photograph, or there was a number of photographs, but one of them struck me in particular, and it was of a Polish major sitting up in his grave, mummified. Now, most of the bodies at Katyn were mummified because of the type of soil and the temperature.
Oh, okay. So they weren't wrapped or anything. That just naturally happened when they died. Yeah,
that's right. Right, that's right. So, and that was a shock to me. It looked very grotesque. So the shock remained with me, and the grotesquerie remained with me. And so that's how I've, that's why I've pursued.
Right.
And look, it's a little known story. Like 99.9% of Australians have no idea about this unbelievable story. And, you know, I'd like it to be known to the world. Andrzej Wajda produced a film, Cut In, 2010. It won an Academy Award.
Ah.
It's a very good film. I think it's more for Poles in a sense. I did write a film script. I took it to Poland. Wajda knew I was in the country, blah, blah, blah. I didn't have money or contacts, time to really pursue it. He made his film, and I think in some way mine's for the world, but, you know, it may yet be made. You could make half a dozen films about this subject. There are so many aspects to it that are incredible.
Okay. So I was going to say, Jim, that this obviously has had quite a large impact on you, because now not only are you obviously writing the play, but this is all linked to what you want to do as far as your PhD goes, isn't it? Because you mentioned your PhD is based on is it the grotesque performative, performance. Can you explain a little bit to me?
Talk about that.
Yeah, okay. Just how is that linked up? I mean, I understand obviously the grotesqueness because you when you explain the play, but how does that lead into the PhD? I mean, obviously it's quite detailed if you're doing a whole PhD on it. But what is that? How do you talk about grotesque in that manner?
Okay, so look, the grotesque has lots of different meanings, and I could talk for a long time about that. And there are elements like force, twisting, trying to jam things that are incompatible together. I concentrate mainly on hybridity and excess, and I express that gesturally and in vocality. It comes and goes. It's not there all the time. But the way I approach it, it's not dependent upon costume or on makeup, as you might find, say, in Commedia dell'arte, although there is gestural stuff in Commedia dell'arte as well. So that's really my emphasis. So I've developed a kind of schema for a grotesque performative. I've done separate experiments, and what I've done is I'm looking at the grotesque from my point of view, so from the inside, as it were. How does the grotesque appear from the inside? And it's easier to do that with experiments than when you're performing a play, because the play, you're always rushing forward in time. You're thinking about what I do next, what I say next, where do I have to go, etc. But I still get a little bit, and I'll just sort of record that after each performance each night, and that will be added in as a part of my whole writing and so on.
And so, Jim, how, you know, like, to give us an overview of exactly what the play's about. You know, what do you touch on in the play? You know, like, because it's such a broad spectrum of what you've been speaking about.
Okay. So what happens is that the audience turns up to the bar at La Mama, and I take them in a minibus, an imagined minibus, as a bus driver, into the theatre, because we're going to see a show called The Cut-In Show in the Cut-In Forest, and it's a kind of light and sound show. So we come in, and the MC is Stalina, played by Carolyn Bock, and between us we play various characters. So we have characters such as I play a woman, a starving Ukrainian woman, because the starvation, the famine in Ukraine, which was kind of engineered by Stalin, that happened a bit before. So they got plenty of practice in handling population. Then we sort of come nearer to the actual thing of cut-in. So we have a couple of officer sort of characters being kind of interviewed and judged. We have an executioner called Vasily Blokhin, who I believe holds the Guinness World Record for executions. He was very active in this whole operation. He was actually the head executioner, and he was known as the housekeeper So housekeeping was the kind of the euphemism, the term for liquidation. So there are characters. Yeah, we play these various characters. We get the story. We get you know what the issues was about. That's what Stalin was trying to do. From his point of view, it's partly a revenge story, because there was a war between Russia and Poland in 1920. A lot of people don't know that. And the Poles defeated the Russians, and Stalin was hauled over the coals because he refused to come to the aid of a Russian general called Budyonny. So there's a revenge element, but there's also the real politic of Stalin, because he knew that if Germany invaded Russia, Russia by sheer weight of numbers would eventually overcome Germany, and they would need to occupy Poland or part of it. They'd need to shift borders in order to secure their defences in the future to create a sort of buffer. Yep.
Okay, all right. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Thank you.
So is it La Mama from the 3rd, which is this week, 3rd to the 7th of March? And what's it called again?
It's called Cutting.
Right.
So think of a car and a team. Yep.
Cutting. Jim Daly, thank you so much for chatting with us, and what a fascinating play this is going to be.
Thank you, David.
Thanks so much. We've been talking to Jim Daly here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
First Nations woman Jada. Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.